that's more to lead us day by day. Welcome up, my friends, to the sweet spot where IT leaders share the insight with other leaders and others that want to lead. We're back with our two hosts, Howard Holden and Paul Lewis.
Hello, was that opening new? Like, I don't remember
it. I haven't seen it, and it kind of... So, have you guys ever listened to the comedian Patton Oswalt?
Yes.
I think so, heard his bit on the alternative cast for Star Wars?
No. Which one? The one that they just canceled, or the original? No.
The original Star Wars, A New Hope. George Lucas had two casts, effectively. The one that got cast and the one that didn't get cast. And the one that didn't get cast had Nick Nolte as Han Solo. Right? Which would have been a much more, oh, Jesus Christ, Chewbacca. Oh, God. Oh, man, I can't. Oh, this is just too much for me. Right? Which is a decidedly like old man kind of approach to the character. I think it would have been hilarious, but the whole intro video made me feel like that. It's all these young people sitting around doing things that who knows if they're important or not, and all I could see is me walking and going, oh God, can we get a goddamn elevator here? Three flights of stairs is too many flights of stairs for me.
I'm absolutely not as productive as those people in that video, that's for sure.
Well, our audience is actually encompass new leaders that are actually joining from different areas, so we need to include them.
I'm happy to be all inclusive. I just, there needs to be some old people in some of these videos, so I don't feel excluded.
I'll go back to the editing. I will ask some old folks. How old do you want it to be in there?
We'd like 40 to 60. That's a nice range.
40 to 60. Okay, perfect.
Just one or two. Doesn't need to be 10. Okay. Serving coffee or bringing in sandwiches.
I think that there was one of the guys that was an older gentleman teaching the new generation. So I think that I tried to put one, but I'll go back. So we're being out, but a lot of new stuff is happening. And a lot of AI, new tools. I get a bunch of different newsletters. So learning and growing is actually being very at a rapidly fast pace.
Don't forget blockchain. It's
in there. No, we can forget blockchain. It really feels forgotten blockchain, doesn't it? Hasn't it? Right. I haven't seen or heard blockchain anything in a while, except apparently I'm doing a huddle at work, which is like an internal training session on blockchain at some point here in the future.
Will it be a short presentation?
Yeah. Danger, Will Robinson. Danger, Will Robinson.
Let me walk you through all the successful use cases of blockchain.
Right. And done. Right. I do love those concepts, though, where someone asks a question and you're like, just so you know, I could talk about this for an hour. But before I start, I want you to know no one's made money at this. Right? Are you sure you want me to talk about it?
Right.
And the tone of the room is generally like, oh, no, don't bother then. Unless you're selling blockchain, no one's made money with blockchain.
So if I'm not making money...
NFTs all the way.
Superman. With all this new AI and technology and everything, there's something that make a difference between just spewing out things and a human being thinking about it or having, let's say, a filter. There's a kid. I'm not going to say something that the kid should not listen. Is AI helping anything there? Should be paying attention, or is that going to affect us in the future?
I mean, so let's start with AI does not think at all. There is no thought to AI. There will never be thought to AI. There will be input and output. It is a computer program, mm-hmm. Right? It is just fancy math. I think we've said this got to be 100 times. So it doesn't think. And since it doesn't think, there is no internal monologue. Right. Now, does that mean that we can't have child safe versions of AI? No, exactly. The opposite is true. However, it does make it difficult for AI to understand context and thus adjust its output for context. That kind of dynamic context is not something that we've really enabled. Effectively, you have to tell the AI, this is what I want you to do, and this is how I want you to act, and this is the persona I want you to play. And that's moderately effective, and it is getting better. But you don't really have the ability to tell the AI something and have it respond differently if it's a child or an adult. Mm-hmm. Right? Not without custom instructions to do so.
And it's a very controlled scenario. You'd have to know you're in a room with these types of people to appreciate that versus anonymous internet user.
For sure. And then I think you also get into the situation where you're in that room, you're with those, you've kind of set that up. How much value does that really have? Right. And then what about the other direction? How far outside of that box, the super safety box, do you really want to go? Mm-hmm. Right. If you look at ChatGPT and the online tools as they are available now, most of them are from the major companies are highly restricted in the types of content that they will cover, to the point where it paints you into a box that is, frankly, it's unfortunate. Right, it removes the ability to collaborate on things that are really kind of innovative and interesting.
Mm-hmm. And is that the Gemini problem, where embedded in the algorithm they put in those constraints versus having those constraints controllable either as an input process or an output process by the users themselves?
I mean, today they're pretty baked. There are some API workarounds that I'm aware of, but I've not been overly successful in finding and using them. Hmm. People are constantly trying to do what they call jailbreaking, right? Of the AI to try to get it to act in ways that are against its kind of restrictions. Those are becoming less and less effective. The reality is, they're trying to avoid being sued for copyright more often than not. Mm. And they really don't want screenshots of the AI responding out of context in a way that is also, potentially damaging to their reputation. That being said, I think things like APIs should be fairly wide open. I think it's problematic when things like APIs are not fairly wide open.
Right. Do you think this is more of a text output versus the IP related to image output or music output or video output?
Well, no, I know for sure that it's video and image as well, right? Because
deepfakes.
It's not even deepfakes, but one of the things that we used to do early on in messing with Midjourney and DALL-E was you would describe what you wanted the art to be, but then you would describe the art style and you would say in the style of, and then you'd give any number of artists and it would generate something in their style. Right. And it has started to stop doing that recently. Hmm. It has started to refuse those instructions because those instructions, it sees that name and thinks copyright issue.
Hmm.
Right. Which makes it really difficult to really get what you're trying to get. Right. Like, if I wanted Studio Ghibli was one that came up over the weekend. It's a really beautiful, like watercolor, hand drawn kind of art style that involves a lot of mountains, a lot of flowers, a lot of kind of anime from the samurai era would be a way to describe it. How would you describe that in a way that doesn't involve Studio Ghibli? Right. Mm-hmm. Like that's really hard to do.
Right.
And so some of that is complicated. And so some of the things people are trying to do is like, describe to me the art contained in Studio Ghibli. And then the output from that becomes the input for the prompt,
right?
Which is like a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy. It's never quite as sharp as the original kind of thing.
Right.
Right. And again, I think we've kind of painted ourselves into a box because we're not giving the correct on ramps and off ramps for the AI, right? To allow it to work within the box in the way we want. Instead, we're just being overly restrictive.
And yet I was perfectly fine to use the weather app to say, tell me whether I should wear a raincoat in New York next week, but tell me in the voice of Hulk Hogan. I had no problem.
Sure.
Which makes sense.
They don't fear the IP protection of WWE, apparently. Right.
Apparently. Although, I think WWE right now has bigger problems that they're not so worried about IP lawsuits. I mean, I guess you could do more than one thing at a time, but...
Right.
So, let me ask you then a question. If that's the challenge with art or with content creation, you have to do a copy out of copy, but it's possible. So, at the end of the day, yeah, you have to go two or three layers, so you can probably create or leverage some of the tools that do the looping so you can get the output. What about regular enterprise, let's say, roles? Is there something there that can impact? Like, is there something like for traditional DBA work or system administration or something in the people that we lead?
Yeah, so now we're talking AI ops, which is a different field within AI, right? The value using Gen AI there is relatively low, right? It's still just a language model. Mm-hmm. That being said, as we look to the future of work, and especially the future of work in IT, right, where it's very back-end systems intensive, right? It's about the care and feeding of the systems, not really the input of the systems. You start to see massive opportunity for automation, and some of that automation will be driven by AI. Right. The challenge there is ultimately, and the worry really should be, how do I develop senior people? The worry should always be, how do I develop senior people? Right. Consultants are very, very, very expensive. And look, I have no problem whatsoever with a future where I'm billing $700 an hour for the specialized knowledge that's in my head, because we've used AI to get rid of the on-ramp for developing that specialized knowledge. I have no problem with that. It'll be $800, $900, $1,200, $10,000 an hour, whatever an hour I can charge, I'm okay with that, because I already have the senior level knowledge, right? And refining it and sharpening it wouldn't be the end of the world. I know where to get that information and know how to do that. My concern is this pipeline of talent is not going to end. Right. And we're not going to AI it all away without ending up in the movie Idiocracy, right? Where no one knows how anything runs. It runs as long as it can until something physical needs to be done, and then it stops running and breaks and falls apart, and still no one knows how to fix it, because we've automated it end to almost end. And that was good enough. That's my big concern.
Right. And I wonder if the endpoint makes a difference here. If we're talking 15 years, it's a distinction than 2 years, right? I don't know if any of us could predict 15 years. We may not even be able to predict 10 or 7, but we should be able to predict at least 2 to 5 to say, given the trend of technology now, including AI, what do we think any one individual role would look like? And I agree with you that automating everything probably isn't the answer, because people still have to work and people still have to earn a living and decisions still have to be made and insights still have to be produced. And the reality is, a lot of corporate decisions are instinctual, not factual, or at least a combination thereof, right? Because they're still people centric. I still make decisions based on people who actually do work and actually click buttons and actually buy the products to which I create. And therefore, there's an instinctual aspect of that. I was recently asked what the future of DBAs are going to be, mostly because what we do is DBA work. And while I considered AI, I considered three other dimensions. So on the AI front, I said AI will create DBAs turning into programmers, right? I think DBAs, while do a bunch of scripting right now, they're likely also going to be doing a bunch of infrastructure as code, a bunch of Python, a bunch of ML programming at some point, right? I think they're going to evolve because they have to add automation holistically, AI specifically, into their role. That's aspect one. Aspect two, I think they'll also be in control of the data security. So I almost think they're going to be the data security officer at some point, right? They're going to be focused on, measured on, ensuring that the asset of the organization is protected in some way, full stack. I also think that conceptually, the database won't exist in the future. I think database, data warehouse, data lake, lake house will all be the same thing, right? All be a platform of some source. So it's less about database management and more about data source enablement, maybe, or engagement. So some of their roles is to manage a platform, not just manage the database, because a platform is a variety of potential sources. I think they'll also be part data engineers, right? Because it's less about managing the source, the table. It's more about ensuring that data can get in and data can get out of the thing to which they're managing.
You're painting a terrifying picture.
Because it's too broad?
No, I've worked with and interviewed a lot of DBAs.
Yeah.
And I could count, in the last 35 years, I could count on less than one hand. Like, I count on Mickey Mouse's hand the number of DBAs that I would trust to do a quarter of the things you just described.
I was going to say something something in the same idea.
And it's not that I...
But do you disagree with that is going to be the expectation?
Maybe. Maybe. Okay. I could see some of that, maybe not all of that, as the expectation. Right. I guess a question that I would have for you, because I don't do it at scale anymore, is how much time do your DBAs spend tuning the performance of the database versus how much time do they spend caring for the changes within the database? In my experience, most DBAs care for the changes within the database, and then the database goes to hell because they've done nothing because they don't understand how to care for the performance aspects of it, you know, creating indexes, properly sizing things, right?
I will readily admit that a good portion of the time is alter table.
Right.
100%. I will readily admit that a good portion of the time is event management, right? Yeah. Something goes wrong. I'm hitting 80% capacity. Something is happening and I have to manage a change of some sort. I have to stop a process. I have to tweak an index, sort of the operational aspects of it. Maybe 10%, that might be generous, doing proactive performance, capacity, availability, reliability management in some way, right? Looking at trends and saying, well, what do I think might happen in the future? Therefore, let's proactively make change now. Thinner slice.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's DBAs are really good at alter table. They're okay at recreate this index. They're really, really not good with what should a proper size be? What should the proactive things be, right? Like recognizing when a new index needs to be created, and dear God, recognizing when an index is no longer used and should be dropped.
Right.
Right. All the performance aspects. Now, that stuff was also infinitely more important when your SQL Server had 64 gigs of memory. You had massive tables. You were always resource constrained, and there was no flash in the world.
Right.
Right. Because all of those things are designed to overcome, hey, here's an index, here's a subset of the data that will load into memory versus trying to load the whole table into memory, failing and having to go to swap.
Right.
Right. Here's all these things that we're going to do to try to improve performance. We're going to split this table across LUNs to try to maximize our IOPS, like things that we just don't really have to do anymore. Even when Flash was small, right? There were things.
Or you're deploying to a fully managed environment, right? Fully managed in the cloud. And I really only have to do alter table because the rest of the stack is a Google function, is an Amazon function.
I mean, you still have to manage your indexes. You still have, to do those things. And you still have
you're not worried about capacity of disk.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Right. But I also don't know, because they don't reveal it on the back end. Like, what does the memory look like that's allocated to my SaaS environment?
Right.
Right. Does the memory always exceed the table size? Right. Because if it doesn't, there's a lot more work I have to do. If it does, there's a lot less work I have to do. Like, if I can read every table into memory all the time, I don't really need indexes anymore.
Right.
Indexes really aren't that much faster.
As fast as it is.
To be worth the re-index time. Right. So, but my point being, like, on one hand, you have an AI that has to learn all of those things.
Yeah.
Right. Has to be trained on all of these aspects. Okay, cool. Then it could probably be pretty good at managing it, but there's still a lot of voodoo contained within that system. right? Mm-hmm. We try a lot of things when performance is bad to try to find the thing that'll make performance better. AI will be infinitely better at analyzing execution plans, mm-hmm. right? No doubt, right? It'd be far better than humans until it gets to the point where the magic is in fact what's happening. Right. I would argue that there are probably humans that are better than any current AI and any AI that'll happen in the next 2 years at analyzing the edge cases, but for the most part.
Yeah.
But then that says, okay, cool. Now we have this group of people that need a new job, that need right. a new function. And ideally that function needs to move closer to the soft skill side, because that's the stuff that's hard for a machine to replace.
Hmm.
Right. And so you have some people that I'm sure, since you manage GBAs, you probably had a list that popped in your head. These people will be fine, right? But then I'm sure you also have a list that popped in your head that says that these people won't be fine.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to do about the people that won't be fine?
It is fair to say there is a subset of DBAs that would entertain, be interested, and even excited about learning other technologies, right? That they have become developers over time, not just DBAs. However, there is a much larger set that have 30 years of Oracle and are passionate about Oracle, and that Oracle RDMS is the one and only, and therefore I don't need to learn anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And while it's true that it has a long tail, I think new versions of the RDMS will reduce the amount of actual time a DBA needs to manage the database, right? They're going to introduce a whole bunch of features that auto scale, that auto proactively determine availability problems, right? It'll happen. And therefore they're spending more time on the relatively easy operational work, giving them too much time. So they're either going to have to learn a new tech, multiple database technologies, or a different skill set like security or development or cloud, or insert other technology there. Do I believe they will be challenged? Yes. Do I believe a significant subset will just retire? Also yes.
So are we then, like, I think that we did a program about the Great Resignation about 2 years ago or something like that. Will we be seeing that, I'm going to call it tribal knowledge, about how truly those databases work, that you can catch it right away? I don't know if you remember, the computers still beep in specific ways.
Hmm.
You know what device is the problem based on the beeps, because it's part of the basic sure, CPU. Sure,
but so will AI.
So then the question is, will a company trust that the whole thing, they don't have nobody for those interactions, or will they have those senior people, or what are they going to do?
The challenge is not the technical piece, but the non-technical piece, right? There's no reason to assume that AI couldn't handle every single error message in exactly the way the manufacturer ensured the error message should be handled nearly instantaneously.
Mm-hmm.
AI can never tell you why that table exists.
Right.
It can never tell you what should be deprecated and what shouldn't based on what's going on within the business. I'm not going to say never, but we're speaking relatively near term here. So in the relatively near term, right? And as that knowledge walks out of the building, right? You can't get it back.
Right.
Right. That is a clock that is ticking. And I think companies are ignorant to the risk of losing tribal knowledge. We see it all the time, right?
And that knowledge is the coupling between the loose coupling between the database, data model, and the application and application design.
Yeah, the database and the data purpose.
Yeah.
Right? So I have no problem. I have no concern that at some point the AI will be able to act completely autonomously to manage the database.
Right.
I do have concerns that the AI will not understand the data purpose.
Right.
And because of that, will likely also make poor decisions, right? Like, it will recommend things be deprecated because they're just not touched. Right, right. But we keep that around in case we're audited.
Right.
Or that's only touched at year end, or that, you know what I mean? That only has some value in case of legislation, or in case of litigation.
Right.
Right. There's all kinds of reasons that things exist, or that exists because of a business that we bought that's mostly deprecated, but something comes up every 3 years that we have to go back through that, and we don't really know what to do with the data. So this is what we've done with the data. But there's all kinds of things that come up there that would have me really concerned about what AI is going to say in that case, what AI is going to do in that case, what AI is going to recommend in that case.
But that's still an idealized world, and not everything is running in a version of this database that has all the AI gadgetry.
For sure.
That's a long tail. There's a lot of Oracle AIs out in the market still.
For sure. There are going to be companies that just simply are 20 years behind.
Right.
Right. That being said, if your current job involves managing a company on Oracle 8i, you would be a fool to think you'll have a job forever.
Right.
Right. There are absolutely some number of people that will be forever employed dealing with applications and tools that have no AI to manage them.
100%.
That will absolutely happen. If there are 100,000 people today employed managing Oracle, that number will not be 100,000 people to manage legacy Oracle.
Right.
Right. And so what you should be thinking if you're hearing this is, how do I future-proof my skill set? Mm-hmm. And that is by not relying on the fact that some companies will not update.
Mm-hmm.
But instead relying on the fact that most companies will.
And you will not attract any talent of any age to do this work. Right. So that number of people who can do this work will dwindle over time just based on age and retirement and other things, and other factors.
Right? And skills aging.
Right. Right.
Like, I couldn't be a DBA today. My skills have aged.
Right.
Right. I can sound smart when I talk about it, but I don't want to do production level work. It's a waste of my time. It's too risky for anybody to hire me to do that.
So that was DBA centric. What if we take sysadmin centric? Do we think the same is true for sysadmin work?
Too much sysadmin work is responsive to an issue. Even if it's responsive to an issue you see coming,
right,
and therefore it's going to be way worse for sysadmins.
Right.
It's going to be far, far worse. Right. Especially considering the number of sysadmins who never ask the business, why are we still running this application? Has this thing ever fulfilled its purpose?
Right.
Right. It's far worse because they really have
a lot of tier two, tier three work. And while they do implement change work, in other words, they're moving some compute from data center one to data center two, from cloud one to cloud two, or, you know, even doing FinOps of workloads, that's a small percentage of their time and energy.
Well, and most of that could be automated as well.
Right.
Right. The thing to keep in mind is if you just think through if then statements, right? Yeah. Could it be done with an if then statement? Probably, which means AI can do it because it can handle a nearly infinite number of if then statements
and loops.
Right. It's just logic, right? So if you can create the logic to do it, AI can look at all of the logic that applies to all of the scenarios and then execute.
Right.
And faster, generally faster than a person can.
Which suggests that development falls under the same category too. There's not a lot of invention in development, at least not at the enterprise layer. There might be in big tech, but not necessarily at the enterprise. Are they inventing a lot of code? They're modifying existing code, but they're not inventing a lot of code.
Even if they are, right? AI is going to replace that in a generation. Right. So then within the next 2 years, if you don't know how to use the AI tools to help you do your job better, you better be 2 years from retirement.
Yeah.
Right. That tail is going to be relatively short. Replacing your job, different story. Right. But the CEO of NVIDIA stood on stage and said, no kids should be learning computer programming today because it won't be a thing.
Right.
When they're at the age that they're entering the market. And I tend to agree with them.
Copilot sidebar, code creates, code optimizes, code, even test case creation, that's all coming out of the automation. I don't really need to code most of that.
So I think that then the question is, to be able to work on some of those systems and to bring that intelligence, someone need to tell the AI about the tribal knowledge. Do you think that then we're going to have them people that will say, no, I don't want to train that AI, or that they will do it wrong so that the AI will fail so they can keep their jobs?
I mean, I'm sure you're going to have people attempt to sabotage the AI, right? In the same way that today people sabotage the outsourced consulting provider, right? That happens. I think you're going to have a lot of people that rage quit. Like, you're going to have a lot of people that open up whiskey bars and wine bars and restaurants. You know what I mean? Organic farms, chicken ranches, you know? I think we're going to see a drive kind of that direction in the next 20 years. Mm. Ultimately, if we do see a drive where governments recognize that the jobs that we've relied on people being able to have are no longer available, that they'll start programs that have a push back to localization of goods, right? Things that are hard for AI to do. Yeah. I think some of that would be really interesting, right? I'd love to see, you know, this kind of push to, hey, you know, if you were displaced in IT, we'll give you a $100,000 loan to buy a farm and start a chicken ranch and deliver eggs to your local, you know, to your local farmer's market. Like,
right.
Things like that might be really interesting. It might get us thinking a little bit more locally instead of buying globally, you know. But it doesn't, you know, when we're talking about this particular conversation, you're still in a position where these jobs are going to fundamentally change in really, really large ways. And again, if you're talking about logic, there's no reason the machine can't do it. Right. And over time, the machine will learn in massive ways that don't require humans to add that level of context. Right. It'll start to do, you know, theoretically, right. There's no reason it can't use pattern recognition, true anonymization, because it doesn't ever need to put it back together, to then create these really, really complex patterns of data usage that then start to look like tribal knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Or tribal just hot point AI to legacy code to self-document. So look at this, tell me what it does. Look at this, tell me what I don't know. What are other questions I have to ask? Right. It could start to create its own prompt engine. So it's prompting itself to dive deeper into the code that it sees because it doesn't understand it enough or effectively.
Well, especially if you give it access to everything holistically.
Right.
Here's the code of the application. Here's the audit logs for the last 5 years. Here's the data. Here's it running now. Here's all the logs about it running now.
Right.
Write a new version that discards the features no one uses.
Right.
That focuses on those that do. In a, you know, what's Apple's framework? Swift, yeah. With a Swift look and feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
The ability to do stuff like that, and then it would in fact be able to start putting together things that were interesting and different and secure.
Right.
Right. Like, it's those sort of things that really start to become interesting when we look at right. what the potential holds. And then it's up to really intelligent people to double check the work of the AI and say, yes, this makes sense. No, this doesn't make sense. Right.
Which leads me to the next question is, now that, like, we had a discussion about several of the individual contributors, what is middle management in IT and senior management in IT now? What's their role now in that circumstance?
I think so middle management's role is really all about translating vision into action at whatever their level is, and managing the pyramid of people so that it's reasonable to layer below them and then reasonable to layer above them.
Hmm.
Right. So as you reduce the size of these pyramids, you start to reduce middle management. They just start to get deleted.
Yeah.
Right. You know, what some of the things that I think are funny is I have a, it should be come as no surprise. I got a really like anti-NBA thing in my head. I have this attitude, mostly because I it's seldom, if ever, that I've worked for a company where bringing in a bunch of MBAs helped anything other than the shareholders. And even then, it's a really short-term help for the shareholders.
Right.
Right. One of the things that I find interesting is I could replace all of that with an MBA in 2 years, no problem. Right. Replace all the MBAs with an AI in 2 years, no problem. Right. Because if you're going to run a business based on a spreadsheet, I don't actually need you.
Spreadsheet and slide templates.
Correct. I don't actually need you. I can just use an AI to run all the spreadsheet calculations for me. And then what do I need you MBAs for?
Right.
Right. The truth of the matter is I need people to do things that require decisions based on context that's hard for a machine to understand. And I need innovative thinkers that come up with the crazy, strange ideas that we can try so we can be distinctive in the market.
Right.
Right. And I mean, I hate to say it, but the real bugger about all of this is the companies that are going to benefit the most by far are the large tech companies that really shouldn't be allowed to become any bigger.
Right.
Right. They're already too big. They already control the lives of too many people. Right. But if you think about it, it's reasonable that in 5 years, Amazon could get 40% improvements using AI because they can dump $100 million, $1 billion, $10 right. billion, $100 billion into it. And if they were able to reduce their workforce by 40%, 25%, right? 25% is 400,000 people unemployed.
And over rely on, let's say, marketplace, so that technologists become bot farmers and bot pioneers. If you're a bot pioneer, you're in the marketplace. A bot farmer is somebody who's going to subscribe to that marketplace set of bots.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So the tech companies can be very thin, right? Because they're just ensuring that they have a vast marketplace that has highly competitive, so that they're consumers and they're going to get their piece of the pie, but they don't have to be the original developer.
Right. Right. It's really interesting. And they're kind of moving that way anyhow. Right. When you look at all the new tech companies that have arrived on scene to add efficiency to one or more things that the big cloud companies do, big cloud companies aren't focused on efficiency. They're focused on good enough.
Hmm.
Right. Their storage is good enough. It right. performs well enough. It doesn't deduplicate, but it's cheap enough. Which leaves this whole layer of marketplace that is about going from good enough to better to best to excellent. Yeah.
On the AI side, they're competing against commodity, right? They want to have all the same number of CPU, TPU, GPU choices.
Sure.
On the PaaS side, they want to make sure that they have a competitively priced, fully managed version of whatever we're talking about, but that there's a one-to-one relationship. I could look at all four clouds and say, A equals B equals C. And I could go down the line of every single service and each one of them has at least one of those things, right? So it's arguably even the PaaS is commodity.
Yeah.
So there's no real winner in that world.
No, they've done a really good job of commoditizing all of that. And AI is going to make it worse.
Right.
Right. It's going to be really hard to be distinctive within the AI landscape. Even today, look at the AI companies that are all showing up. Every AI company that shows up either is smoke and mirrors or does exactly the same thing as 50 others.
Right.
Right. Like this is not magic.
Right. For the same price.
Yeah. Right. So, but it is going to be interesting. I will say again, while we still are in the experimentation phase of Gen AI, if you're a professional working in IT, you should not be asking questions about what is it. You should be asking questions about how do I get better with it?
Right.
You should have an account. You probably should have a paid account and you should be using it a lot.
Right.
And thinking about what can I do to make my job better? What can I do to make someone that works for me's job better? Yeah. I saw a really interesting one today. Guy hired a salesperson that has a severe dyslexia. It's very hard for that person to write emails. And so he just created a Zapier workflow. That every time a new email is created, the email gets rewritten and resent with ChatGPT.
Interesting.
And the company closed their largest ever single sale from that salesperson, because very genuine salesperson. Wow. Excellent on the phone. Just can't write.
Wow.
Right. Really simple when it's all said and done. Just rewrite the emails so the emails sound like they're professionally written, because it's effectively a handicap. Let's unhandicap the handicap person.
Right.
There's no shame in it. There's no nothing. And it couldn't have cost more than pennies to do.
Right.
Right. Okay, cool. Now, can you expand that to everybody else? Why not?
That's kind of the problem, is individually it's cheap. Combined is expensive. So if we're talking about $30 for an embedded, you know, Copilot per person, you have 40,000 people in your organization.
That's sure. But that's
pretty
not
big,
how
they pretty big dollar figure.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's not how they do that, right? They have a corporate API account that Zapier links to.
Right.
Right. And so the cost there is the pennies per month for the Zapier license for that particular workflow.
Yeah.
Right. And it ends up being dollars, because you're still paying for the API calls, right? But if it's $1,000 a month, no, it'd shock me if it's $1,000 a month, and ultimately, if you can't close an additional $1,000 for the business that way, you probably need to take a look at your business model, right? Like if cleaning up the language alone doesn't help you close an additional $1,000, there's something massively wrong with your business model.
Yeah. The ROI should be obvious,
correct. By one. Nearly instant.
It's way less obvious as a group.
It's way less obvious. Like that's the problem I have with Copilot, right? Like it's way less obvious when you're looking at, I've got to have 40,000 licenses for Copilot.
Right.
That's much, much, much harder to get that value back month after month in the aggregate.
Right.
Right. It's really easy to go, I've got 5 high performing people anyways, I'm going to make them more high performing, and it's $40 a month per person. Okay, cool. That's not even worth thinking about. Right. But not everybody fits in that box. Right.
Right. Especially since when you look at just the digital workplace in general, either 365 or Workspace, it's never 90% utilized every single service that's available to you. No. Right. It's up and down, and it's up and down every single month. So you're not even maximizing the value of the $15 you're paying, let alone maximizing the value of 15 plus 30. But that starts to get even more egregious.
Yeah, that $30 is like really a big ticket.
Yep.
I will say I'm waiting for some like GCP or MSP, sorry, MCP, Microsoft Cloud Provider or Google Cloud Provider, to come up with like a pre-built accelerator. Hey, we'll take over your account. Here's the pre-built accelerator that you get for $1 a month. We add the following like AI generated emails, or we add AI auto sort, or an AI assistant. You know what I mean? I haven't seen that. I'm really waiting for someone like, I don't know. I hear Pythian is a GCP.
Good idea. Why don't I explore that? So Carlos, we described 40 minutes of dystopia versus utopia.
However, I think that is,
it sounds more accurate how we're describing it than a utopia.
You know, it's interesting because I think that the details, as we have shared, things can happen. If we just stay and the audience just stay and wait, and they don't jump into what is happening right now, it's going to take so long for them to catch up that the wave, literally, you're going to be, to use the word tsunami, because it's going to be so much that is coming after. Because like we're probably on the second and a half year of ChatGPT. So the people that jump early on have been killing it and making a ton of money and making a lot of improvement. So they need to catch up to all that improvement that happened. And if they just, well, I'm going to wait to see what's going to happen. That means probably 3 years. That means 5 years of the technology. It can affect them a lot. And I think that that's the key. We don't want the folks that are listening to get caught by surprise. But at the same time, probably you have a certain skill that combined with AI could become your new superpower. Like you said, there could be things that you can be helping others, that you can be those new skills that can be done by AI, that tribal knowledge that now you can help the company reach those new levels, because you said, oh, now we can automate by integrating these features, or now we can leverage something else and not just think that it's the iRobot or the Terminator is coming to kill us.
So. I think Howard kind of summarized it well. I think what we're seeing is enterprise pause on enterprise use cases for things like Gen AI. But what we're suggesting is you can't pause in any one individual use cases of AI Gen AI, right? Your own career, your own technology, knowledge base, because it's dramatically going to change in a relatively small period of time. So don't let the appropriate pause based on risk for, you know, your chat with my data for customers. Don't make that be your burden.
I agree.
Well, and friends, a pause is not a step back.
No.
Let's be really clear, right? We're not putting the genie back in the bottle.
No.
Right. And so there's lots of organizations that are pausing, right? Or removing the ChatGPT feature they just released.
Yeah.
That just means they released it a little too fast. They're still going to revisit it. They're still going to re-release it. It's still going to be, you know, ChatGPT is going to be the interface of the future.
Yeah.
I have no doubt about it. Right. And so if you don't get your arms wrapped around it now, you're just doing a disservice to yourself.
I agree. Well, my friends, take the time to sit down, take your notes, listen, and then take the proper decisions so you don't be left behind. My friends, we'll see you on our next episode.